Welcome to Model Minority Moms, where we talk about the meaning of success in career, family, and life. We are Jeanette Park,
Kate Wong,
and Susan Liu,
Harvard classmates and Asian American working moms who get real about the pressures of fitting in while standing out.
Greetings, greetings. Here's another episode of Model Minority Moms. We are coming off that holiday rush where it was exhausting, so fulfilling, so nostalgic, and yet, did we mention exhausting? But in the spirit of that, we've been getting some questions from other listeners about how do you travel with kids? How do you make it actually, like, the tactical? How do you travel with kids? Some pro tips, do's and don'ts, our unfortunate learnings that we might have learned over the past holiday. So let's just kind of get into it, because who doesn't want it to be easier, right? So let's talk about it. Is traveling pleasant for you all with your children? And I guess are we going to assume, is this plane or car? Plane, right?
Plane.
Let's start plane.
I haven't really done long road trips with my children. Like, yeah. I was at one point in the middle of COVID planning to do like a Seattle to Los Angeles road trip with my then 2.5-year-old and my 3-month-old. And when we had this on the calendar, but my daughter was only like a month old, we took her to a doctor's appointment, but we got like literally half a block and then we had to stop because she had a blowout diaper. And I was like, okay, we're not going to make whatever the drive is, like 1,000 miles. We're not going to be able to do that. We're just good. So we actually flew during COVID. Like, we put on masks and then we didn't get COVID, but we flew. So yes, airplanes. That's what I have experience in.
Yeah, I think the longest road trip that we've taken, we just go to Seattle to Vancouver. So it's probably like a 4-hour trip, but we can talk about that some
other time. That's still 2 hours longer than any trip that I've made with any of my offspring. So, I mean, road, like, car wise.
Snacks, screen time. I'm all in now. Lollipops, gummies. I'm that mom I thought I never would be. But anyways, that's car survival.
Advice by age group, because I have traveled with both newborn and like moving baby and toddler. So how do we want to?
Okay, let's just go from house to airport, and okay, like, we'll cover categories of ages, and then airport to plane, plane to location, and back. I mean, like, literally, like, let's just go in the literal way that we would be thinking about it.
I think we should think about tickets, right? So when you buy tickets.
How long, how old of a kid do you have with lap seat where you're like, I can still like not buy another ticket for them
legally
versus
two, right? But I would say whether you buy a seat for your under 2-year-old is very dependent on your family situation, finances, and your child.
Yeah. How wiggly they are.
Yes. That's a big part of it.
So what is
something else that we need to think about even before buying the tickets?
I think there's just like a number of considerations just even before you think about how to get to the airport, right? So let's just talk about like trip planning, right? So yes, I think that buying the airplane tickets, you know, all of a sudden red eye could be terrible or could be okay, depending on where your kid is at, you know, with sleeping. Generally, like, it's not bad for me to have my kids sleep on the flight, but just know that if you're going to do a red eye, then they're probably going to get more like 5 hours of sleep, you know, and then maybe like a little bit more sleep on the ride from the airport to your destination than that like 10 to 12 hours of sleep they're normally going to get. And you, as the parent, are definitely not going to sleep. So just like keep that in mind, right? I mean, so I think just timing of the flight also matters.
So wait, have you done a red eye with your kids?
No.
I would not even consider it. Bravo to anyone who considers it.
So have you ever been like, the longest flight we could do is X number of hours? Like, oh, like the first 1 to 2 years of their life, I could only go like a 3-hour flight or something like that. Or we wouldn't go international, or like, is there somewhere of like, what is possible, you think, for them?
So my son is almost 5 and we have not done any international flights. I think the longest flights we've done with him are like around 6 hours, right? So cross country in the US. I think for me, it's the length of the flight, but it's also time zone change. So I have friends, you know, who have taken their kids to Asia and, you know, their kids wake up, they just roll with it. And I think that, you know, obviously that can be really wonderful and a lot of upside in terms of having your kids like meet your extended family and maybe be more in touch with their culture, you know, their cultural inheritance. But it's, I think you just have to go into it with the right mindset because it's going to be a very topsy-turvy schedule while you're there. And then more adjustment, you know, when you come back. And so I don't think I could personally speak to that experience, but we have limited it to within the US travel only.
Yeah. Do you ever schedule it during their nap time? Like flight takeoff is when the nap time should ideally start. Like, so do you try to play that game?
I had been advised to do that by some college friends. And I think with Raya, we only flew once with her when she was a baby. But it's really hard, right? Depends on where you're going. You can never time it exactly. And then obviously there are flight delays. I've completely given that up actually with Leela because I can't deal with coordinating two nap schedules, right? To get the optimal flight time. I think sometimes the stress of that is just not worth it. And surprisingly, actually, because I took both of them on a trip with family in December, it worked out okay. But I think it only worked out okay because we had a ratio of two adults to one child, which helps immensely when you're traveling. And I do think that's something else to think about, right? Because I've traveled alone with a baby. Nirav has traveled alone with a toddler. And we've both traveled with a baby. And then we've both traveled, you know, with family, with baby plus toddler. So I think that really matters, is to think about who you're going to be traveling with as well, right? And that child to adult to child ratio is very important. Like, I don't think, I've seen moms at the airport, usually I say moms, I'm sure there are dads who travel alone with two of their children or more, but I have personally not really witnessed that until the children are like older. But anyway, younger children, I've seen moms with like up to three kids by herself, like recently, last fall. And I was just like, you need a prize because I don't know how you were doing it. Like, one was a baby and then there was like a toddler and then there was maybe like a elementary school age kid, right? So
yeah, I have seen those as well and seen those folks as well, those unicorns. But yes, okay, totally. I'm like, oh my goodness, bless when you.
When I see those moms, I go up to them. I'm like, do you need a snack? Can I help in any way? And then they're like, no. And I was like, okay. And then I like back away. But I just feel like I would like that if someone would ask, but then maybe I'm like really creepy.
No, that's so sweet. I actually, you know what? I should do that next time. If I see a struggling mom with kids, I should be like, hey, can I help? Can I help you?
Yeah. Give her the mom look. Like, yeah. I see you, girl.
Yeah. Oh, there's something else we forgot to mention, which that typically flying is not recommended before the babies get their 2 month vaccinations.
Okay. Okay.
That's just a disclaimer, but obviously consult your medical provider, but that's generally what I've been told by our pediatrician. And other.
Yeah. I remember that people were like, oh my God, you should travel with them when they're like, is it like 3 to 6 months old? Because they're like, you kind of have more of a grip on like what's going on in your schedule and your process, but like they don't move as much as like when they're like one and a half, two, right? So then you're like, that's a great time, even though it just feels like there's just like so much at stake.
I can tell you, having traveled with a 3-month-old, that is true. And I'll tell you why. Because one, they can't move a lot. Yes, duh. But two, their sleep architecture is still a newborn sleep architecture. Usually that starts changing around 4 or 5 months, right? Where it's called a sleep regression. Really, it's a progression anyway, separate topic. But so it's much easier for them to fall asleep. They kind of, you know, even when there's noise around and light and so forth. And then also just, you know, I feel like newborn schedules are a little bit more flexible then, right? You get a little more forgiveness. Their bedtimes are later typically than older babies. So yeah, I actually, Nirav and I took Leela to actually our 10th college year reunion when she was 2.5 months old. And it was, I wouldn't say easy, but I definitely felt like it was easier than juggling a toddler. And also later on, I took Leela when she was 6 months old to Paris. And then we took her to Hawaii when she was 9 months, 8, 9 months. And I just definitely, that was like the easiest trip for sure. But also I had Nirav, so maybe that made it easier.
Yeah, yeah. I think for me with Art, he was in my lap until like maybe a year and a half. And then after that, he was getting his own seat. He was like too wiggly. We tried to buy one of those like strap things that you attach to the seat belt so that their chest is more protected.
Oh yeah, like a child restraint.
Yeah, there's a couple times I traveled with him without Marvin, and usually Marvin does gadgets and I don't touch any of these things. So I was just trying to do it without like choking Art and like making it worse off. And I just felt like it was just too much. But we bought one, I don't know, on Amazon for like, I don't know, $20 or something like that. It was like FAA approved. I don't know. But like, do you buy those strappy things too?
I have purchased one. Nerv used it. And after that, he said, I don't want to use it again.
Yeah, no, my kids, when they are in their chairs, I put the seatbelt on them, just the regular lap belt. And then like when there's turbulence, I kind of like just kind of grab them.
You mean like you just hold them on the side or you just put your arm in front of them?
Like I kind of put my arm in front of them because I think the main danger is that they fly up. If the plane drops suddenly, then, you know, the passengers can fly up and then they can hit their head on different parts of the airplane. That's, I think, the major risk. But I think the whole additional restraints, it just doesn't work. I mean, my kids just won't be in there for 4 hours, five hours, 6 hours. So, and it's just also another thing to carry on the airplane. And we should talk about packing and, you know, luggage, because it's not, I think when Kay was mentioning like adult to kid ratio for us, part of the advantage of that is, you know, having more eyes and hands to make sure the kids are safe, but also it's their stuff. They just have the amount of stuff that you have, like forget being able to do only carry on luggage, right? Those days are gone, at least for a good long while. They're, you know, they have like a ton of their own stuff. They have car seats, they have strollers, blah, blah, blah. And when I pack for a trip, I have to actively think, what's the ratio of adult hands to children's hands that need to be held plus luggage and other things that need to be carried? So what's the configuration, right? Because if there's one of those carts available at the airport, then we just automatically get one, but not all airports will allow you to take those carts all the way to the rental car area, right? And like, if you're kind of at the periphery of the airport, then nor are there always those carts available, right? Even if there is a station. So you always have to be prepared for the possibility that you might have to at least make a short distance walk, sometimes a longer distance walk, with all your stuff, like that you're actually holding them, you know, and you're potentially carrying a kid, like blah, blah, blah. So it's like, that's the way I think now. I'm like, okay, you know, Jake is going to put the pack and play on top of this big suitcase and he's going to be carrying, you know, he can like hoist the car seat through the straps, like onto his shoulder, so he can carry four pieces of luggage. You know, one kid will be in the stroller, like one kid will be riding in the back, and then I can carry another stroller. Like if some other adult is coming with us, like grandma or au pair, then that au pair is like another pair of hands who can bring some other piece of luggage, right? So that is the route that I go down every time I do a trip planning.
Yeah, packing. Okay, wait, should we talk about packing or are we back on the plane?
No, we can talk about packing while we're on it. I mean, I'll just add an addendum here, which is like, I'm also happy to share on our website, but I have like a whole packing list that I go down. So I have like a Googled sheet that's like more exhaustive. So it has things like, you know, snow clothes or like sled for winter trips, but it's more of an exhaustive list of things to take on each trip. And then I print it out before every trip. And then
I need this list.
Just cross out everything that's not applicable to that trip. And then I just turn into a robot and I just go fetch all the items from the thing. And then I just put, so it just reduces the mental load on me and also reduces the chance that I'm going to forget something. But yeah, that's my method. Yeah. Probably overkill, but
I don't think it's overkill at all. I think it's like, it's trying to go travel with your kid is like a very big feat to just, it's just a lot. And I think one more step in just making it less burdensome is awesome. I'm curious, do you always like account for, we are going to go do laundry wherever we're at, so we don't need like an outfit for the exact number of days we're going to be gone? Or like, how much are you counting at? Like, do you go like, I'm going to bring the whole brick of diapers from Costco? Or you're like, on average, he uses 5 to 6 diapers a day, and then I'll like add 2, you know, like what are you doing in terms of like trying not to overburden yourself with too much to bring? Like, are you trying to be minimalist, or you're like, no, we need more margins of errors because shit always happens?
So this depends on
the length of trip that you have and where you're going. So for example, if it's a longer trip, I almost always order Amazon Prime diapers to either the hotel, Airbnb, or wherever we're staying, because I don't want to lug around, especially when the baby, that you go through like 6 diapers a day, right? Nighttime diapers, if it's like a short trip, I just count however many nights there are and then just bring them, because usually it's hard to buy like nighttime diapers in packs of like 4 or 5, right? That can be primed, Amazon primed. Like I will order to the destination, like that takes up space in our luggage, right? And then, for example, when we went to Hawaii, it was a longer trip. We were staying in Airbnb and it definitely had a washer dryer. So it only brought 4 or 5 days worth of clothes. But also it depends on the type of vacation, right? If you're going to a tropical vacation where kids are going to the beach and the pool, like kids are going to get dirty. Like 4 or 5 outfits is not enough. You're going to need like 8 outfits, because even with 4 or 5 outfits, we were still doing laundry every 2 days, you know, because kids just get shit dirty frequently. And so I think you just really need to think about that, you know? But hey, if you're traveling like domestically, unless you're, I don't know, in the middle of nowhere, usually you can have access to a drugstore with like diapers that you can get there. Or, you know, like I said, Amazon Prime. So I feel like that's like the biggest tip I use, so that I don't have to schlep disposable items with me.
I never thought about that. That was awesome. I know sometimes up until now, I mean, Art's like 2¾. He still sleeps in a pack and play when we're out somewhere. So we were bringing a pack and play. I know like one of my relatives stayed at a Four Seasons hotel, and then they actually have pack and play there available for free. I mean, I don't stay at a Four Seasons hotel, but my point is like some hotels might have those amenities, so it's one less thing to check. Or there are some Airbnbs that I go to that do have it on their list of amenities, which is kind of great. Or like I might make the request to the host and then maybe they'll just pony up and have one there or something. So
but also I will say that, I will just add on the Airbnbs that it can be of varying quality and cleanliness.
Okay,
the
fair.
Pack and place.
We bring our own sheets.
We bring our own sheets, but yes, I will just, you know, yeah. And there's always like that element of variability.
That there is a startup called Baby Quip, Quip.
Yes. Have you used that?
No, I haven't, because like Big Island, there's just not a lot of availability. I have friends who've used it and they've been pretty reasonably happy.
Wait, what is it?
It's a baby gear rental. So it's like, it's designed for traveling. So you can rent even things like books and toys, you know, pack and plays, high chairs. My thing with them is, okay, I'll say a little bit more about them. They have this model where they essentially have independent contractors who are often moms, and they have this stuff. And then the website just connects you to these different families who, you know, charge you to rent these items and also drop them off and pick them up from you. My main thing about them is that it's like their prices are pretty high. So the times that I've looked at renting them, it's like if your trip is anywhere longer than 2 or 3 days, a lot of times it would be the same price for you to buy one. Like, yes, let's say actually, from a Target, right? I have looked at that website a couple of times, but usually I just end up making a Target run. And then even if I donate the item to the Airbnb and just say, hey, like use this for your next guest, it's the same, you know? So I have not used it yet, but I know it exists.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree with Jeanette. The calculation, you should just calculate how many days you're staying, and it can often be cheaper to just buy if your destination does not provide.
Yeah. One note on high chairs, we use like a hook-on high chair. So it kind of collapses and it can go underneath like a table and you screw it on. And we use that quite a bit when we were traveling, which was great because then we never had to worry about a high chair, or sometimes we'd bring it to a restaurant or things like that. But once Art hit probably like 2, he didn't really sit in it as much, but he like was insisting on sitting on a chair. But anyways, the hook-on high chairs are pretty cool.
So should we talk about the next step, or is there anything else about trip planning?
Okay, you just bring car seats, right, for your kids?
We bring car seats. We have also more recently experimenting with renting a car seat from the car rental company. So what we
How
will
much
do
is it per day?
It I was mean, like $11 a day. So, you know, it was not like over a week-long trip. It's not cheap, but it's also, you think about lugging. We don't have travel car seats. So we usually end up like lugging like the regular huge car seats, and it's just such a pain. So this last time what we did is we borrowed a travel car seat for our younger child, and then we rented a car seat from the rental car place for Isaiah, and we drove ourselves to the airport, right? Because you also have to think like, if you take an Uber to the airport, then you do need to have, you need a car seat for every leg of the trip. So it only works if you're going to drive yourself. But there's other kind of devices too. Like there's something called Safe Ride, which is, it's like essentially just a harness. There's no metal or plastic bulky parts to it. And if your child is over 35 pounds, you can start using it. And it's like something that fits into a slim little pack. But the, I think you would have to be kind of a certain physique, I think, to wear it. Isaiah's like very lean and kind of lanky. So we tried it on him, even though he meets the weight requirements, it's kind of loose on him and it just didn't feel very safe. So we're still using car seats for him. But, you know, but there are these other options you could look into.
I always wish Uber had Uber Baby and like they would just have a car seat in it. And then Marvin's like, well, there's too many types of car seats and then you can fit less passengers. And I was like, I understand that, but it would just like make my life so much easier.
Yeah.
But like expiration dates of car seats and blah, blah, blah. I don't know. All
and
of that.
A lot of liability issues.
Yeah. Any other tips for minimizing packing? Because like sending stuff there. Wow. Didn't think of that. Anything else that you do that you're like, try this. Oh, I'll tell you what you don't try. Don't ever go on this like, and I think I've mentioned on the podcast before where me and Art were just going to California once. I had this like alumni event and I was like, let me see if I could just do a one check-in, no car seat thing for me and Art. It's going to be the no car seat challenge. So I stuffed a giant mountaineering backpack with all our stuff, including the hook on high chair. And I put it all in one pack. So I was carrying one pack and I had my yo-yo Zen stroller that is like 5 pounds and can fold up really compactly. And I was just pushing him around and I just said, we're just going to take public transportation all the time. And I remember like that week in San Francisco, it was like 80 degrees. And I was walking around with him. He'd like pass out and I'm like sweating bullets because like you have to wait for the bus. You have to wait and you sometimes the bus doesn't come. And I was like, it was like a really cute experiment. And it was kind of crazy. Like I could, like the mountaineering backpack was so tall. I was barely like fitting through like the doors and stuff. And I was like on the BART and doing all that. I mean, it was kind of fun, but I understand why people pack car seats and have additional luggage. But it's my point is if you're traveling with just one kid, how are you going to like carry, like drag one really big luggage and push the stroller at the same time? And
oh yeah, that's what, you know, I mean,
it's
yeah.
Just I mean, okay, then yeah, then you do get the, I understand why people get rental cars and also bring their car seats, but it's also really hard when it's one parent to one kid.
Oh totally. It's I remember getting to the airport on one of these trips and there was a family and they had like 4 children under the age of 7. And I just remember like, they're all like, they came, grandparents are dropping them off. All the kids file out, like the mom holds 2 kids' hands. Like then the older kids are holding the younger kids' hands and they're just all filing in. Everyone has their backpack and their dad is just like lugging like 4 car seats, but he can't carry them all at the same time, plus all their bags. So he's just moving one piece at a time, but only like 10 feet ahead. So he's just lifting one car seat, moving it 10 feet, coming back and doing that all for 8 pieces of luggage. And then just, you know, like a little ant. And I was just like, I guess that's how you have to do it.
But see, okay. So this is where my cheap ass is like, this is when you got to pony up for money. So like curbside check-in where you like pay, just tip somebody, right? Like this is when it's worth it. Like to drop off, to drop off all your stuff. So Marvin would drop off all some on the bigger trips, drop off all our stuff. And then he would go to the car parking lot thing that we would pay for. And then he would meet me back at the gate or farther along or something like that. Because like in that scenario, going curbside, instead of like shuttling it onto their shuttles and all that stuff, it made more sense.
Yeah.
So that's really great. And then also just like, if you can get, you know, one of those like premier statuses or whatever by like MVP status or whatever, like then you can go into the priority check-in line and it's just like way less schlepping and moving of your stuff while it snakes around the line, you know, like that's when it's like really key. Or like sometimes you can get like priority check-in if you're an Amazon employee or a Microsoft employee on the Seattle side, and it's just so great to just, those amenities just mean so much at that point.
Yeah.
I think also just logistical hacks that have really helped me a lot are if your baby is, you know, still in an infant car seat, even before your baby is born, get a car seat that can, with adapters, go on your stroller. That's super easy because then you can take both with you through security and just gate check both. That's what I do with our car seat, which is a Nuna car seat, and it uses adapters to go on the baby's and yo-yo, same stroller that Susan has. And then also otherwise you can even hack it. Like we actually hacked one time the Costco Sonera travel car seat. We just used a luggage strap and strapped it onto the same baby's and yo-yo. It's like an unofficial hack. If you Google hacks with whatever items you have, there may be a way that you can hack it, right? Which makes things so much easier. And then the other hack that I recently realized is if you have a wagon, so we have a wagon, and it counts actually as a stroller. So I literally push it. I dump shit in it. I mean, you have to put it through security, but then once you get through security, you can put kids in it or not, or you could put all your like hand carry luggage into the wagon, lug it to the gate while you either carry your child or they walk or they sit in the wagon or whatever. And then you gate check it. It's great.
Oh yeah.
Highly recommend.
Where'd you get yours?
I need that. Yeah. There are a lot of different wagons. Ours is from Veer, V-E-E-R. It's really great, but there are a lot of ones that are like less expensive, also bigger. I mean, you know, so that was my favorite recent hack. Ooh. If you have multiple kids or just a shit ton of carry-on luggage and want to free up some hand arm space.
Yeah. I like that one. Okay, cool. Shall we go on the plane now? Okay. You know, the whole like, okay, takeoff and landing, their ears are going to pop, and like, just give them something to suck on, like a bottle or a pacifier. And then their ears don't pop. Like at what point do you do it? Like, is it when you can feel it in your ears or when you hear the ding sound?
I think this is age related because I noticed that Leela before this last trip. So when she took the trip, when she was 2.5 months and 6 months old, she didn't have any issues takeoff and landing. But this last trip, when she was 9 months, boy, she did not like it. She did not have a good time. So I think there is a process by which Nerov is explaining to me now, I forget, where it, like babies of a certain age, younger babies, they don't actually feel that popping, or it's not an issue for them. But after a certain age, it is an issue. So that's, you know, something to keep in mind.
Yeah, I think it also differs by person. Like it never seems to be an issue for Isaiah. Or really Ruth, like I think the only time was when she was kind of congested. So I usually pack a lot of snacks and I'll just give them something to eat, you know, during that time. And it's never been an issue. So I just can't speak to it personally. I mean, but I think it might just differ from person to person. Like grownups, you know, some people it's like totally fine. And some people it's something they have to take care of.
Oh, so you can do chewing. You don't have to just do the sucking motion.
Yeah, I think it's just moving your jaws and just swallowing that can, you know, help your ears pop.
Yeah, Nerov, I think that's right, because Nerov gave Leela some, I don't know, bread when she started screaming her head off during landing, and it was better. She didn't actually even want her pacifier, so the sucking didn't help, but the chewing did. So that's a good tip.
Yeah, I'm just always really nervous about, like, the timing. Like, I'm, like, ready with the snack. I'm just like, I just don't know how long they'll be chewing the snack for or whatever. It's like, it stresses me out.
But you know what? So, Susan, this is kind of takes me back to like a really good piece of advice that I either read or somebody told me, I can't remember now. This is before we traveled with Raya for the first time when she was 10 months, was they said, look, you have a child. And oftentimes parents get so stressed out about their child bothering other people on the plane with their crying that everything becomes infinitely unpleasant. And the advice was just accept that your child is going to cry. Ignore all the other passengers, even if they shoot you dirty looks, because probably a lot of them have had kids and, you know, they forgot how hard it is to be a parent traveling with a young child. Children will cry for various reasons, especially younger children. And so just basically fuck everybody else and just focus on you and your child. And actually that helped a lot because Raya like screamed for 10 minutes each time before she fell asleep on her first flight. And I was just like, you know what? I don't want to feel sorry. I don't want to apologize and feel like anxious because I'm afraid that other people are going to be staring at me because she's a baby, you know? And yeah, so that I feel like that advice has gotten me through, at least in terms of me feeling anxious about quote unquote bothering other people. And, you know, this last time when I took a flight, Nerva and I took a flight and we even had, you know, our nanny and my mom along, but Leela was just like crying during part of the flight and I was bouncing her up and down. And a couple of moms are so nice. They were like, oh, I remember that stage. It's really hard, you know? So like, yeah, I think, you know, Don't worry too much about other people. And then if you see a mom suffering because her baby's crying, tell her, like, you know, like I heard from those moms, hey, it's hard. You're doing a good job. You know, that made me feel a lot better.
I don't know what it is, but whenever someone says you're a good mom, I start sobbing. Okay, so pretend baby is crying and losing their mind. They're not eating any of these snacks that whatever that they like or that you could count on. I remember when I was a kid, someone was like, oh, just give your child whiskey. And I'm like, really? You can do that? Or just like, oh, I bring Tylenol cough syrup and I just give them a little bit. Like,
or like Benadryl.
Yeah. So have either of you ever been like, it's time, you know, like, is there any pool for like, you know, break in case of emergency kind of thing? Or you're just like, or you're just kind of like, babies are babies. Because like when I was pre-baby and I heard kids like losing their mind, this is before noise canceling AirPods and, you know, like when you could like have headsets or watch movies, like it was just like, I would be like, what are they doing? Come on. You know, like, is there a break in case of emergency for you that bails you out? Or you just accept that this is a phase of life you're in. I have pirate's booty. Okay. Art loves pirate's booty. I have bags of them all over, just hidden. And that's my last chance dance there. But is there, do you actually give them Benadryl?
No. I mean, like other, I mean, I don't think that giving your kid a little bit of Benadryl as a last resort thing is terrible. I mean, it's not going to harm them, right? And if it kind of calms you down, calms them down as a last resort, I you know, I think it's fine. I wouldn't pass judgment. It's not something I've done or had to do, but I think I've heard other people do it. And, you know, I get that. I don't know. I don't think I have like a kind of break in case of emergency type of tactic, but I do bring a lot of things for the airplane. Like I bring a lot of little toys. So there's the screens, but I usually bring a few little books. I'll probably bring two or three new toys, but not big toys, but different activities that they've never seen before for the airplane. And I'll just kind of whip them out if they start getting antsy. So Melissa and Doug have these travel toys. Like there's one where there's a little marker that you can just fill up with water and then they can color, but like, anyway, it's like this thing where if you color just with water, it like reveals a picture. There's another one with reusable stickers and you can create farmyard or zoo scenes or whatever. So we've done those. There's also little Easter eggs. Like kids like love like opening up those Easter eggs and just finding little figurines inside.
Are you talking about like the Kinder chocolate ones or is there another brand that you like?
No, I'll just take old Easter eggs and just stuff random toys that they haven't played with and just put them in a bag. Ooh. So yeah, and then so I'll just intersperse this with screen time and snacks. Yeah, so it's just kind of like mom clown, like, what do you want? Screen, Easter egg surprise, fake bars, you know. I feel like with my older one, he's definitely really into his TV shows now. So there's less of that I need to do. He wants to watch his shows and then take an occasional break for a snack. But with my younger one, she enjoys TV more, but still sometimes she just isn't into it. And, you know, then I need to pull out the other stuff.
Bag of tricks. Any top snacks that you're like, that you go to repeatedly?
I think variety is really important. Like when I pack snacks for Raya for the plane, I pack at least 4 or 5 different snacks in small quantities. It's like, you know, so it's the novelty. She keeps snacking on the plane. And then I also order like a little snack. Like we always take Alaska because we're loyal Alaska Airlines customers, but they have like a snack pack, like a kid's snack pack. That's pretty good, you know? So we do that. And then, you know, we give them little bits of our food. She's very food oriented. So it's actually really easy to keep her distracted with food. Yeah. So I would say variety is key.
Yeah. Art loves that snack pack. Like when it,
I love it. Those gummies are so good. They're like the best gummies ever.
What is it? Aberdeen?
I've never heard of it, but yeah. I know what you're talking about.
You told me about them. Yeah. Yeah.
But
there's a little meat stick, a little booty and something else, but like, and then there's some twisty wax.
Yeah.
I was like, this is the best $7.50 I've ever spent in my life. And if you buy an Alaska card, it's 20% off. But the point is like novelty, right? Of like, yes, what they're just like, they don't,
they haven't seen. Yeah, like Jeanette said, she brings up stuff that her either kids haven't seen in a long time or that's like totally new. You know, I think that's a great idea, whether it's food or toy.
Okay. Can we talk about changing a diaper on the plane?
Oh my God.
Okay. My confession is I've never done it. Just Marvin has because he's like.
Oh, I have a tip though. Okay. Sorry. Okay. What? I'm really excited. Okay. So, oh my gosh. If your child is still in diapers, I read this online, so I can't, I do not take credit for it. Put your child in an overnight diaper right before you board the plane. So unless they poop, you basically don't have to change the diaper the whole plane ride.
Wait, what's an overnight diaper versus a diaper?
It's just it's like an extra capacity.
It's like extra capacity. Yeah. Yeah. Like you don't, like I use overnight diapers for my kids at night and it's just like, they can absorb like, I don't know, like 2 pounds of pee or something.
Wait, oh my God. Have I been missing out? I didn't get this memo. Wait.
You didn't ever use overnight diapers with Art? Oh my God, maybe that's why he was waking up in the middle of the night sometimes.
What?
Wait. No, Susan, I never used them with Isaiah. I haven't used them yet with Ruth. So, I mean, I know it exists and I recently actually purchased some by accident for Ruth, but it's not like something that everyone uses necessarily.
What? Really? You guys are the first two people I know who don't use overnight diapers consistently.
I never used them with Isaiah.
What? I would not be able to survive because I cannot, I have not changed Leela's diaper overnight since she was like basically 5 months old.
What? Wait, yeah. What age do you use overnight diapers?
It depends. I mean, I started using them with her like when she was 3 months, but I would change, you know, do like a change in the middle of the night.
Girl, I don't know. Let's go to the every kid's different reason here. Art's 2.75 years old, and there's only been maybe two or three instances where the diaper was wet enough that his shirt got wet. Three times. If they come in a 10-pack.
Riot pees a lot in the middle of the night. I don't know. So I've always, even now, we do overnight diapers, or we do a regular diaper with a booster pad.
Whoa. Okay, got it.
Yes. Anyway, but if you don't use them regularly, but that is a tip. If you want to avoid a diaper change, I mean, obviously, if they poop, you have to change their diaper. But if they don't poop...
How long do you wait? What's your max time?
For the overnight diaper on a flight?
No. If they pooped.
Oh, like immediately? I try. Cause I mean, both my kids... I mean, Raya has really smelly poop. So, like, you can't avoid it, you know?
Uh-huh. Jeanette?
Yeah. Like, within... Sometimes I'll give them, like, 5 minutes just to make sure it's all out.
Me too.
Susan, is there a confession? Is there a confession coming?
No. It's really hard. Yeah, you have to just kind of be on them, like, really, because you just never notice that there is a very small changing table on those very small airplane bathrooms, but there is. But
what? There is?
Yeah, I've used them, like, twice, there is. But I... Yeah.
There is, yeah.
Over the toilet.
Yeah, it's like there's something that... It's like a very small table that comes out of the wall and then creates a little changing surface. But like everything in the airplane bathroom, it's of kind of questionable sanitation and just very crowded. And, you know, like you always worry about your kid, like somehow getting his hand in there or her hand in there and, you know, smearing it all over the walls. And then the other thing is there's not a lot of room to maneuver, right? So like if you were at home, sometimes I'll put my calf lightly on Ruth's chest just to keep her hands away from her bottom while I change her diaper. Or, you know, every once in a while, if another adult is available, they might distract her while I'm doing it. But there's no room for two adults in the airplane bathroom. It's just you and a poopy diaper and a writhing baby. So it is, I'm not going to lie, it's dicey, but I haven't gone to the worst case scenario yet, but you can do it, Susan. Like, I mean, it's been done. You're like, I'm never going to do that.
I have two tips. I have two tips for that, Susan. One requires longer term preparation and the other is immediate. So both of my kids are super friggin' wiggly, and starting from basically when they were 6 months, I had to diaper them standing up. Like there's no way I could keep them lying down.
What?
Yes, correct. So with that being said, I actually now, once they turn 6 months and I diaper them standing up.
Even poop diapers.
Yes, even poop diapers. I do not change them lying down in the airplane bathroom. What I do is, you know, those doggy pee pads. I bought a whole bunch of those when I had babies because they're great. They double really well as like mobile changing pads that you can just dispose of. So I will typically put it on the seat of my plane seat. And then I stand them up on the plane seat with a toy or whatever. And they just like, you know, they're just like holding on to the seat and then I change them.
Yeah. Oh, you are in public changing them.
Oh yeah, whatever. I mean, well, so usually I have only done that when I've been traveling, like with my husband and then like, you know, maybe another family member. So that whole row is ours, right? So like no one, you know, but they also generally speaking, by the way, Raya doesn't like to poop on flights. She has this thing where like, she only likes to poop at home. Also, she had constipation for like 5 days when we went to Hawaii. So she like didn't poop for 5 days, but anyway, so I haven't had to do that with her, but with Leela, you know, baby poop isn't as gross, right? Once they start eating solids, it does get grosser, but it's still easier than changing a toddler. So it's not that bad.
But you don't get looks from everybody else on the seat being whatever. Like, yo, there's poo poo.
I'm just saying that whole row is usually at like, you know, it's like right. Me, husband, yeah. Somebody else. If somebody else sees, whatever, fuck them. I don't care.
I mean, it is technically easy. It would be easier. I think Marvin, what he does is, we have this like go bag of like diapers, cream, wipes, whatever. He just gets the bare essentials that he needs, like one diaper, a few wipes. He actually doesn't even use Vaseline cream, but that's like a longer discussion. And a poo bag.
You don't have to use it every time.
Yeah, you don't have to use it.
I don't use it every time now. What? Only at night. Only at night, basically. I did it every day with Raya, but I don't think it made a difference for her, so I just do it at night.
And whatever, placebo for me, it makes a difference okay. To me. And anyways, and then we bring doggy bags.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's a great tip. Dog poop bags.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And we have a little trifold layer liner or whatever. And then he just goes, does it, and he always says it's very hard and then comes back. And I'm like, thank you. And that's it. I've never seen it done.
We hope you found something helpful, reassuring, or interesting in this episode of Model Minority Moms. If you enjoyed the episode, please help us spread the word by texting a friend about our show or leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. If you want to connect with us, please visit our website at modelminoritymoms.com or follow us on Instagram, where we love receiving messages from our listeners.